Hello and welcome to the podcast Invest in You. Today we got a guest from England, we got Ivan in Sweden, and I'm dialing in from India. So my name is Frederick, and who have we got from England today?
My name is Rob Goddard, and I'm delighted to be invited onto this, what should be a really intriguing conversation.
Excellent. Delighted to have you on.
Perfect. And what's your name there in Sweden?
Yeah, I'm Ivan Sandvall, and I am the son of Fredrik Sandvall, which is why we look alike.
that's probably true. That's probably true. All right. So without further ado, so we have in the last few episodes spoken a lot about acquisitions, people who have been working on recruitment related to both sell and buy side. On the latest episode, we spoke about a person who's doing exactly opposite of what you're doing. He's helping buyers to find the right targets, which is partly negotiating the price down potentially. And Paul, what do you do?
Yeah, exactly. So is it helpful just to have a quick 60-second background?
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
First half of my working career was in banking. I saw the light. I resigned. I went and lived in – I took my family to Los Angeles and went and lived in a commune, and I operated a food ministry for the church.
It's
out there. I came back. Yeah, I came back to England, decided there's no way I was going to go back into banking. So I worked for a private company, and then I got headhunted a couple of years later by an M&A firm on the sell side that wanted a general manager to come in and grow it from what was £1.5 million sterling turnover. And I took it in 7 years to 15 million turnover with 130. So, yeah. But they would never give me shares, those people, right?
Yeah, that's a tough one, especially with the MD, especially when they're doing heavy lifting.
Yeah, that's right. I was in my mid-40s, and whilst I was paid really well, it wasn't about cash for me. It was about equity and capital value. Yes. So we couldn't agree, so I left, and then I set up in competition with them.
Yeah, sounds like fair game.
So I've been I set up a sell side M&A advisory firm, industry agnostic, selling in any sector. Made a lot of mistakes on the way, but turned it in from scratch as a one man band. I turned it into a 2.6 million turnover sterling business with £900,000 on the bottom line.
Right.
And that was during a double dip recession.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I did that in 2011. Right. I sold most of my shares in that a couple of years ago. So I had my first exit for myself as opposed to doing it for other people. Nice. And I've been on a journey of not knowing exactly what I want to do, but I knew I wanted to have fun. I acquired a business 18 months ago, which I sold 2 days ago.
Perfect.
And I got a 400% return on my investment in 18 months. And the company I bought, or we bought, I got a partner, was £350,000 loss in their previous year. So we did a turnaround piece, made it profitable, and then the first half of the year it was 86k net profit half year.
Oh, perfect. Yeah.
So I've never bought a business before. I went on a couple of courses from Jonathan Jay.
He's been on the podcast before. It's everywhere.
Yeah, just to really learn what the other side does. Because I've spent over 20 years now working on the sell side. So me and people I've employed are at the other side of the negotiating desk of people who are looking to buy businesses.
We're
looking at the reverse to a buyer. We're looking to sell our client's business for a huge amount of money, high multiple, and most of it is cash on completion and no deferred.
All right. That's very good. Let's dive into that, because that was one of the things I'd love to hear more about. I spoke with Ivan about deferred consideration. For people who are new to buying companies. Can you explain that concept, what it means? If you buy everything cash today, what people might think you have to do versus to deferred consideration, please?
Yeah. So deferred consideration mitigates the risk for the buyer. It's not so good news for the seller because they don't get a big fat check on day one and walk away into the sun. So somewhere between those two opinions, there's a deal to be had. I think, in truth, I can't remember the last time, apart from the one I did 2 days ago for myself, where someone has walked away with all the cash on day one.
Exactly. Yeah. It's very unusual.
It's what I would call a structured deal, or a lot of people call a structured deal. So you get some on day one, and that's banked by the seller. The rest is in some form of deferment, and there's two types of deferment. There's a deferred, where installments are paid out and they're not contingent in the future on anything apart from the passage of time. The other form of deferment is installments are paid in the future, but only if certain milestones are hit, agreed measures. So for a seller, there's risk because once they've sold their shares, if they've got a deferred element to the structure,
they're
in the hands of other people.
The
new owner could make a hash of it. You know, really, you know, the numbers could go south once it's changed hands.
Indeed.
So deferment is a tool that's used by people on both sides of the negotiating table to try and structure and broker a deal.
Yeah, I think that's really well put. And also another aspect to put to this, Ivan, if you would be the owner and you've been working towards like your payday, regardless if you got all the money today or not, would you like to stay in the business, which used to be you're the boss, you're the owner, and now you have to work for someone else for like a salary or consulting fee on their terms? Would you like to stay or go if you could choose?
Well, that probably depends on where I'm in my life.
Good response, yeah.
Depending on how much I like the business, I may actually stay and keep working.
Yep.
But sailing off into the sunset is also a great option with a lot of money, of course.
It also is whether you like the people that are going to be your new boss.
Yes.
So one of the soft issues, and I have to educate sellers on this, is you've still got to work for them, and now you've got a boss, as you quite rightly said, Frederick. Yeah. And most business sellers have never considered that. They say, oh, I can work for anyone for the right money, and I say, rubbish.
Yes,
You'll resign within a week. When they tell you, no, you can't do that.
You need to be here this time in the morning.
It's kind of a downgrade from being a business owner. You have more responsibility, but... Yeah, a lot more autonomy, so it's a big difference.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. The minority, in my experience of business owners, can work for someone else for a given period. Most can't. Yeah. Most, particularly founders, owner managers, they've been used to making the decisions for 30 years. There's no chance they could work for anyone else.
They come into the category of unemployable. So, Ivan, you know that my birthday present for myself when turned 40 was to resign and stop. Like, I don't need to work for other people again. That was kind of my present, and it was so rewarding and really great. Just the other year, I tried to jump into someone else's business, and already like day one and two, I started thinking, but okay, I wonder if I would like to 10x this business, what would I do? Like, how can I buy the biggest competitor in Sweden? How would I structure that deal? So imagine, like, and I was not an easy, like, mid-manager level. And then, of course, it took like a few months to climb extremely quick the ladder from being used to be the number one to climb up to at least number two. And then
it's hard, isn't it?
It's very hard. And now I am doing like what people do after school, like having a gap year. My gap year is working with the military and the UN. So I've got a gap year from business. It's really nice. It's really cool. I really like it. And I come in with great passion and energy to be back in my case, in uniform again, after many years. Excellent. At the same time, when you used to be the number one and now you have to follow someone else's lead, it's you have to be a bit disciplined, self-discipline.
And speaking to the point you've just made there, a very valid point is when you sell your business, you lose your identity quite often.
Yes.
Particularly us men.
Yeah.
Especially your first one.
Yeah. And so I'm still trying to, after 2.5 years of selling up, I'm still trying to find my new identity. I've been trying a few things. Yes, I did acquire a business 18 months ago, which I've just flipped and made a return.
Yes.
But I've also been doing business mentoring, helping business owners prepare for an exit, the do's and don'ts, which buyers to attract, which buyers, acquirers to avoid. Yeah. How to negotiate a deal with an acquirer that's been on a course where they believe they can buy a business for a pound.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm educating the seller as to how they can turn things around. So I actually really like the business mentoring.
I either
do sort of a 2-hour mini session, a one-off, chargeable. I don't give free advice these days. I've learned now. A 2-hour chargeable session, one-off, or they can engage me for a day a month where we meet one-to-one and they pay me a monthly retainer.
I
love that work because you're going in and you're helping fellow business owners get their business sale ready and prepare it for an exit whenever that might be.
Yeah. I mean, I remember my latest like one-to-one mentoring. It was very limited time they had, but they got access to all my network and experiences. And in 1 year, they accomplished the same as they've done in almost 20 years in 1 year.
Wow. So
they made more than 5 million additional in their portfolio. This was related to property, but again, just with the right person on the right level to help you to open doors and inspire and so on. And now I'm very much like yourself. I'm open to a few non-executive positions, but only if I have a share in the company. Otherwise, not interested.
I concur with that. Yeah. The other thing I have in mind, and I'm going to take the first step in a couple of weeks' time, is to approach UK business brokers on the sell side.
Yes.
And help them close more deals as a trainer.
Yes, yes.
Yes. Yeah.
No, exactly.
Well, I've been working as a trainer almost, but on a very much higher level.
Yeah, because I don't know about Sweden or even India. I certainly don't know about Sweden, but I know in the UK, the majority of businesses don't sell. A common figure quoted is there's an 80% failure rate.
Yeah, exactly.
So 4 in 5 businesses never sell. Part of that, one of the reasons is there's a lot of very mediocre business brokers out there.
Yes.
And some are dreadful. There are a few good guys, but they're in the minority. And of course, a business seller doesn't know who the good guys are and who the not so good guys are. They have no idea. So I want to try and improve the conversion rate in my country of origin because an 80% failure rate is shameful.
Yes, yes. I should introduce you to a few people who got very high ratio and then what they do differently. But I used to work with sales consulting. So like yourself, helping companies to become sellable by organizing the whole sales structure. And same thing there. It's like a magic wand. And most companies, the salespeople don't like sales. I met people who like they are in sales, but they don't like people. Like, congratulations. You're selling something you don't believe in. Like, Ivan is nodding as well. I've had Ivan to work with sales at an early age because that would be invaluable later. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm sure.
Finished school at 18. He sent me out into the world. It was a terrible and fantastic experience at the same time.
No, I'm sure it's very different in Sweden, but in the UK, my experience in 40 years of being in sales is that most people in the UK can't sell.
Yes.
Yeah, it's the same here.
Probably okay. Work. Yeah. Yeah. And a common problem for people in sales or business development is they talk too much. they don't ask questions. They go in to present and they talk 80% of the time, when really they should be asking questions and listening 80% of the time. I call it they throw up and they show up and throw up.
Yeah, Ivan, you had very good like one-to-one coaching from really, really good sales coaches when you were out there and they were shadowing you. Yeah. You remember you had the same feedback as well early?
Yeah, the exact same. That was probably the most difficult part for me is when you're a salesman, especially when you're selling smaller things, not massive companies, you don't really have a lot of time with each client. You maybe have like 1 or 2 hours once in your life. And you have to maintain complete interest fully and really get to know them and become very good, you know, friends, really, with this person. And you have to do this, you know, many times a day for all throughout the week for many months or many years. So I thought it was a bit difficult to connect with everyone, especially since what I was doing was, you know, door-to-door sales and referred like sales all over the country. It could be anyone, like absolutely anyone, any age, gender, everything, and you have to really be a chameleon. It was difficult.
I drew like a dress rehearsal, a dry run with every client that I've helped them sell, and I take the place of a buyer, and we do this sort of coaching session where we pretend that I'm the buyer, they're the seller. And they start going into presentation mode about how wonderful their company is and talking about the lovely widget that they invented, that they're so yes. passionate about their widget. And I have to say, stop, stop. They went, what? You want me to sell? I said, no, I want you to ask yes, questions of the buyer.
Like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very good. I'll remember that one. I said, no, well, how can I ask questions? They've come to buy my business. I said, I'll give you some example questions you can ask a buyer. What attracted you initially to this opportunity? Ooh. And then shut up and let the buyer speak.
You're just putting all the pressure on them.
Yes. And they said, all right, you've got any more questions? Yes. The next question is, if you were lucky enough to buy my shares, what would you do with my business over the next 3 to 5 years? Ooh, you could see my client writing this down.
So yeah.
Now you get
you're making up a picture in the head of what they would do. So they're like, they are in a situation in their mind where they're already in and like owning the company and operating it.
Yeah. So again, it's this thing about selling. It doesn't matter whether it's a business, a widget, or a pen. It's about asking questions to the person in front of you to get an understanding as to what their motivation is, what their plans are. And actually, when we're asked questions, we feel valued, don't we? A bit like being on a date for a first date. If you kept talking, I say to my clients, if I keep talking about myself, that date is going to go to the toilet at some point and never come back.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
You can be a very impressive person, but people still don't want to hear it.
Enough about me. Can we have the bill?
Precisely. Yeah. So I think that's a lesson we can all learn, that we, you know, it's better to ask questions than make statements.
Yeah. I met up life. with a former employee. He was working in the UK, and then later he moved to India, and he shared with me, but like probably the most important thing I taught him, and it was related to networking, but it absolutely relates also to the sales or meeting anyone situation, like to be interested, not interesting. And that's so hard as a man sometimes.
Yeah.
Hear, hear. Especially if you've had some degree of success in your life, because you've got plenty to talk about.
Yeah.
You can relate, Ivan, right?
I can relate, even though I haven't done much. I still very much want people to know what I'm doing.
I find this also in networking events. Most people make the mistake of pitching.
Yes.
Working the room, gathering as many business cards as they want. It's better to have one or two really meaningful conversations than get 20 business cards.
Exactly.
And annoy the hell out of them after the event when you start emailing them, linking on LinkedIn.
Yeah, exactly. To set like a target, like in this evening, at least I will find one, two or three people that I would actually like to see again. And they would like to see me again. And then that's a successful meetup for me as well.
Yeah, definitely concur.
Right. So should we jump back to selling companies even?
Rather than dating women.
Yeah, we've got too
dating
much
techniques.
Too much flow here. And negotiating the deal.
Seneca, what would you like to know about selling companies? What would be helpful for your listener base?
I think you said on your profile that you're enabling companies to reach their target number. So can you elaborate? I know what it is, but the seller's magic number, what that is, and then secondly, how can you help them on the journey to reach that? Partly a part of the process you're working with.
Brilliant couple of questions. In fact, the question about magic numbers, helping a client reach their magic number, I actually put a post on LinkedIn today about magic numbers. When I've always asked, I've met thousands and thousands of business owners wanting to sell over the last 20 years, and I do ask them at least one question, all of them the same question: what is your magic number? They give me the wrong answer. They start valuing their business.
Yes.
And I have to say, oh, no. The market will decide what your business is worth. I didn't ask you about the value of your business. The market will decide that if and when you go to market. I want to know what your magic number is, i.e., what is the capital sum that you need from the sale of the business to finish one chapter in your life and start a new one? That probably isn't the value of the business. And they go, oh, I don't know. They almost always say, I don't know. And I say, I don't think that's the truth. Yeah. I think you do know.
Yeah.
You just don't want to say.
You don't want to say to me. So I've already seen their accounts by that point. So I give them a really low ball offer, right? I say, if I think it's probably worth 3 million, I say, do you know what? I think it's worth 1.5. Would you accept that today? And they go, oh, no. I said, well, you do have a magic number in mind then, don't you? We know it's above 1.5 million now.
Yeah.
How much above 1.5 million? And of course, the answer to that question is, and most business owners never think about this, is what do they need in the future in order to sustain their lifestyle? So that's really a question for an independent financial advisor, you know.
Exactly.
An IFA.
Exactly.
That they're often, once they understand that a magic number is their number, it's not a number I can give them, it's their number.
Yes.
The post I made this morning on LinkedIn is I had a 2-hour consultancy session, one off, this week with a company that are looking to sell and 3 shareholders. And I asked them the same question and they came up with 3 different magic numbers.
Of course.
1 million, 1.5 million, and 3 million.
Yeah.
I said, do you know what? I think after this session that you've paid me for, I think you need to sit down and agree a common number.
Yeah. I'll pause you there for a second because I love to build on one really important phrase you mentioned there. When you talk about magical number, I love that you said to move on to your next chapter, because most people, they think about like, this is the number that will sustain me for life. Guess what? You will not do nothing for life. No one is doing that.
Yeah.
So please take a note of that, everyone out there. Yeah. What is the number for the next chapter? So
you
might have an idea what it might be. So okay, please. All right, let's jump into how can they enable them to reach that number?
Yeah. And just before I do that, the profit I made on the business I sold this week, I'm looking to buy another company next week.
Yes.
And I'm going to use the profit from that.
Not surprised.
I'm supposed to be semi-retired.
I never will. But it's semi-retarded instead, like me.
So how do I make that happen? I think it's the coaching and training and mentoring, depends on what people need, to move them along that learning curve about how to sell a business. And that means, how can I make my business saleable to someone else? Because there are people that call their business a business, and they're not. They're a job. Yes. They are not transferable to another entity, because either it's a one-man band or a one-woman band, or that even if there's half a dozen people, the owner is at the center of everything. And I never touch those for sale. To me, they're unsaleable. It's not worth all the effort and the high risk of failure.
Yes.
And I say, so to those people where they've basically got a job, sometimes they call it a lifestyle business, which is a nice way.
Yes.
But actually, it's not sellable. It's not transferable. I said, the first thing you have to do is make yourself redundant. So that means you've got to build a succession plan. So you've got to surround yourself with people who are better than you, John, Mary, Bill. Yes. And they go, oh, I don't think anyone is as good at this.
Yeah,
they say, I don't think I could find a replacement. I say, really? In the whole world, there's no one better than you at doing what you do. And then we get the laughter. So I think I like educating business owners, because most business owners have never sold before. So they're quite green to that. They might not be green in their industry. They're probably an expert, but they are about selling a business. So I want them to make themselves, I want them to make themselves redundant, and the business isn't reliant on their day-to-day input, expertise, knowledge, yes, contacts. That's a difficult path. But that's one of the ways that I help business owners over a period of time. It might take years rather than weeks or even months, but they need to be on the business, not in it, is the familiar phrase.
Yes, yes.
They acknowledge it, but they don't do anything about it unless they get someone like me on their shoulder saying, if you want to ever sell your business, you've got to do this. So once you've got a business where you've got a team around you and maybe you're not working full time, then maybe consider an exit or selling the business. But you've got to get those key people in place. You've got to get a good number two that can replace you. Because they, do you know what? They assume, the business owner assumes that the new owner will have a ready-made CEO or MD that's twiddling their thumbs wanting to know how to fill their week.
Yes.
They expect the acquirer to have their successor. And I say, no chance. You might get lucky, but usually not. What they'd expect you to do is have that person already in place.
Yes.
If you haven't got that person in place, you will have to stay on, get a boss, have the new owner buy your company. You become an employee, and you have to find a replacement with the new owner of your old company. And then, you can go.
Advice. Soundbite that whole minute.
Exactly.
And so they've got a choice, but owner reliance is a big deal breaker.
Yes.
And I've learned, in the old days, I used to take on those mandates, sell mandates. I don't now. I've learned it's a mistake. Yes.
And the opposite, that a company where the person have taken on exactly the advice you've said. They have got SOPs like in the military. The people know what to do. People can disappear and it will still work with someone else picking up the paperwork and ultimately may themselves not need in the office. I'd like to give you some advice here, Rob, how you can make your job even better. This is just a thought. Ivan, do you remember?
Go for it.
We went to Bali many years ago now. It's like 7 years ago now. So one of the criteria for the people coming to this retreat, which was again off-site in a different, it was in Bali for that, doesn't need to be in Bali, it can be anywhere. But the people who came there were supposed to not communicate or do anything with their business, which meant as a preparation for this workshop, they had to get their SHIT together so that they could be offline for 2 weeks. And that alone was worth everything for the retreat. And that's a massive first step towards doing exactly what you're doing. So potentially you should take people away from the reality if you haven't tried it already. Yes, a thought.
I love it. No, I haven't. It's, and it's, I
it's
love
really,
the idea.
It's really, really powerful. I have.
Wow.
I highly recommend it.
Well, thank you for that giveaway.
Absolutely.
I like hot places as well, yeah, which is why exactly, I'll never live in exactly. Sweden.
We've got a few trips between. Yeah, avoid Delhi. It's just a little bit
of dust. Yeah. I used to live in Dubai and Los Angeles, so I do like the heat. The other big topic that's second to owner reliance that can yes. cause a deal to collapse or make it unattractive is financial reporting, i.e. the numbers that the seller has got are not robust.
Yes.
Or worse. I ask them for their management accounts and they look at me with a blank stare.
Yeah.
So, well, you I know don't what you mean. Keep Yeah.
I know exactly.
They said my accountant deals with that. I said, well, your accountant's not selling your business.
And he's dealing with that 3 months too late every year. Every year.
Yeah. Yeah. I say if you don't have management accounts, it's like driving up a motorway, the M1 in the UK, and looking yes. backwards in the rearview mirror.
Ivan, So management account, Ivan, is basically that you have your accounting up to date, ideally with like monthly reports inside the board. It's not a shoebox of receipts for our year that you give to your accountant too late, and therefore you're always driving blind because you have no idea about even cash flow. Sorry, back to you.
That's fine. Yeah. And the third area, which is always missing, almost always missing, not always, but almost always, is they always talk about future value, right, sellers? Next year. Hockey stick growth curve. Yeah. So I say, right, can you send me, pressure can show me your 3 or 5 year growth plan then as to how you're going to get to those numbers.
Yeah. And also add the last 3 years of accounts to it as well. To see the trend.
Yeah. 95% of business owners don't have a growth plan. I avoid calling it a business plan. And I say it isn't about having figures on a spreadsheet. It's the narrative that substantiates those numbers that a buyer's going to want to understand. So you've got to know how you can deliver those future numbers. And you've got to be convincing in front of a buyer. And maybe they've got their accountant's PwC in the room.
Yes.
So I think the lack of, and this is a criticism of most business owners, is they don't plan ahead. They're working in the now, particularly founders, because they didn't have time to plan. they did everything and they're responding to things that day. So I get that. But if you want to sell a business for a premium price, you've got to get into the financial forecasting, getting monthly yes. management accounts and make sure that you're not at the center of the universe within the company.
Yeah, to add to that, if you can also show a reliable sales forecast based on real customers and how you retain people, all of a sudden now you can multiply the value quite easily.
I agree. Yeah. And of course, the problem is if the owner is the sales director.
Yes.
Right? And they haven't got a number two.
No, he's also the number two. Sorry.
Those are the fun areas. Those three areas are the fun areas. I spend quite a lot of time with business owners on. And that's what I mean by getting businesses sale ready. Yes. And getting the business owner sale ready isn't just about the business. It's about them as a human being. They've got to be sale ready.
Yeah.
Mentally
prepared. So I'm 100% sure that this resonates with quite a few people somewhere in the world. So how can people get hold of you after this? Where can they find you?
Oh, LinkedIn, definitely. Rob Goddard. The only thing I ask is I will connect with anyone. But if they pitch to me within a nanosecond of me connecting, I will unconnect with them.
Good.
And also, if they connect with me, they can DM me and ask me for a copy of my book. Oh, can't.
Nice.
The 11 Commandments and the 7 Cardinal Sins of Selling a Business with me on the front. I can send one to Sweden for you if you like.
You should.
Yeah. You got it.
No. We would love it. We don't have it.
Okay.
We
love it.
Yeah.
We should have already bought it.
Well, you can on Amazon. You can pay me. You can pay me a royalty, or I can give you a couple for allowing me onto your podcast. But that little book helps people the do's and don'ts of selling a business.
Perfect. Perfect. Yeah. No, we discussed that whether you have a book, because quite a few of our guests in your line of work of really good business advisory, that's what my assumption is. And they usually have a book as part of how people can spend time with you without actually seeing you. We've got the same with the podcast. People can spend time with us and learn from us, even if we haven't met yet physically. So yeah, I'm with you.
There you go.
All right. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, in fact, I've got six books, and I've got a seventh I'm writing. Retirement, is it a myth?
You need to. You shouldn't hide that on your LinkedIn. It's not obvious. It wasn't obvious.
No, I don't like to give everything up front.
No, in that case, keep some of the mystery. I like it. All right. So we have been talking about a lot. We could easily do this for hours more. I can feel that right away. But I like to give the audience a chance to carry on with their day or night, for that matter. So any last few words from you, Ivan, from Sweden, to our audience?
A very big thank you for being on. And you're doing God's work with helping people who are stuck working in the business to become free. Thank you for doing that.
I love that analogy.
Well done, Ivan.
I'm sitting, I trumpet.
Yeah, because we've seen a lot of business owners, me, Dad, you know who I'm thinking of, that they're stuck in their business.
They are.
They're
in prison. Some of them, it's a golden prison because they're making a lot of money, but they're still imprisoned. So I like the analogy of setting the captives free.
Yeah.
Nice biblical reference to end on.
On that note, thank you so much, and see you on LinkedIn. All the best.
Look forward to it. Cheers, guys.